Okay, we are live.
Fantastic. Hey, Toby, let's just go ahead and get started and barrel on through. And I know we have some people aren't used to us doing a separate third teleconference a month, and others will be logging in here in a minute. So we can just kind of get going and include them as we go. Hey, a couple of things is, for anybody who does not get the Wall Street Journal daily, it's the first thing I do in the morning, is there's a great cover story on the Wall Street Journal just below the fold about McDonald's. And I'd highly recommend that everybody pull that out and read it. It's interesting because the story is specifically about transitioning from a family-owned franchises down grandkids and the opportunities and problems with nepotism and how McDonald's specifically deals with that. But what I thought was useful about the article was not, you know, really wasn't related directly to the article, as they talked about a new store opening with about a $1.7 million cost to build out and so forth of getting the store open, and talked specifically about one of the owners, it was the owner's son, who was now moving into the business, who insisted upon spending, I think the number was $40,000. It insists upon spending $40,000 as a grand opening marketing budget, over and above what the dad thought was reasonable. It seems like their normal program would have been basically to, you know, to do a soft opening, let people discover that they were there. And the outcome of that discussion was that their business plan was for that unit to do $2 million for the year. And in fact, in the first year, it did $3 million, attributed it at least in great part to the opening blitz, where they got the community involved, a lot of community outreach. So it's a, you know, it's an interesting story from a couple of angles. You know, we do have some people who are dealing with, you know, with nepotism or one thing or another. And McDonald's said,
give it to them for the people who brought you a list of names.
Toby, we may need to go on lecture. Toby, hopefully this isn't my second day of problems with teleconferences. Yesterday my problem was we had one teleconference where for about half the teleconference nobody could hear me. Although we ended up with fabulous content, we did about an hour interview from my colleague with Will Mayer about student retention. That was fabulous. We probably should do the same thing for the Performance Share Circle this month or next month. And then the next call was the NAPMA call where you were on the plane, and the problem was for the first 20 minutes of the call or so forth, I couldn't get the system to mute everybody out. So you had me talking to Don Sutherland about West Point and some conversation going on in the background of some place. Where somebody, you know, just logged in but didn't really know that they were live, I guess. So hopefully today is better. But that was my first thing, Toby, is that article today, I think, is very interesting from a standpoint of, for some people are speaking in terms of passing their business down to family members and so forth, and it's probably interesting. Also, too, it discusses, you know, McDonald's mostly aversion to that, because of how stringent they are in trying to pick on their operators that will be successful. But the other thing I thought was particularly interesting is the discussion of some of the grassroots marketing. And people think of an organization like McDonald's as mostly being, you know, I'm loving the commercials on national TV and stuff like that. But in this case, it was actually a unit where grassroots community outreach marketing had added as much as $1 million to the first year gross through a fairly minimal expense, about $40,000 in the first month. So it was kind of our target, is $30,000-$40,000 grand opening marketing budget, spent mostly in community outreach activities. But
I don't want to say it's a trend, but, you know, a lot of even national brands, I mean, as you well know, but for just kind of framing purposes, I think for everybody, there are a lot of national brands out there that do have a lot of brand equity, but still it's all about that community outreach, community marketing. I mean, if you look at something like a Chick-fil-A or a CC's Pizza or, you know, those types of, even Sylvan Learning Center, Kumon, Huntington, those types of businesses.
Domino's. A lot of their marketing is door-to-door door hangers and hitting the dormitory, you know, person-to-person-to-person to get going.
Yeah, well, yeah, I had made it a mission of mine down here in Florida to just, you know, go meet everybody who was doing what I wanted to be doing, right? You know, I met the regional director for CC's Pizza, and I think they had like 16 locations, you know, across from Orlando to the beach, and the same with, you know, Chick-fil-A and things like that. And again, the marketing strategy they have for opening a new unit is so similar to what we should be doing for grand opening for not just a martial arts school, but not just the grand opening piece of the martial arts school, but frankly ongoing. And especially something like a CC's Pizza, you know, they're buying a ton of television time. They used to buy a ton more, right? But they're on television quite a bit. But again, still, the biggest thing that they do is they set up with local elementary schools the CC's Pizza Night. And they hang banners on the inside of the fence at the school and, you know, those types of things. So it's exactly the same type of activity that, you know, certainly we have the ability to have a deeper impact on. And exactly the same strategy with Huntington Learning Center. The regional director for Huntington Learning Center down here in the Orlando area, I think, had like 9 locations, something like that, from Tampa over to here. And, you know, I made it a mission to have lunch with them once a month. And same deal. You know, they go in and basically provide free tutoring on location in small chunks, right? So, like, if a certain student in a class is having a little bit of difficulty with reading, they have somebody there on certain nights where anybody can come in for like a free session, right? And really what that free session is an intro.
Oh, yeah.
They do kind of the evaluation with the student, right? And then they communicate with the parent and say, hey, listen, this is what we found. Here's how I think we can help you, you know? So it's just such a similar set of strategies that, you know, works really well, not, you know, cross-platform, right? Cross-business.
Well, yeah, and Hunting and Sylvan, as you said, is like Sylvan is all over national TV now with the 1-800-EDUCATE. But truth be told, the vast majority of their traffic comes from their community outreach directly with individual principals and individual elementary schools and middle schools and high schools. So that's a huge part of their marketing plan, even though they have 1,200 units across the U.S. and a huge marketing budget now from both ad funds. But the So why don't we start with, though, we should have Jeff Smith join us in about 10 minutes. We can kind of expand on our conversation about the upgrade process. But why don't we kind of start with what some of your takeaways were and some of the takeaways of people that you've heard from our last meeting, and then maybe I can kind of hit the same thing if I have time before Grandmaster Smith joins us.
Sure. Well, you know, I think, you know, in my conversations since the meeting, I think, you know, maybe there are two or three things that have been, you know, pretty impactful for people at the upper end. And again, you know, today's call is strictly Inner Circle members only, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the folks that I had in the Peak Performer Room, for framing
different
purposes,
needs.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Their needs were, you know, systemizing their introductory process, systemizing their, you know, new student acquisition processes, systemizing the renewal process, all that sort of stuff. But from a higher level standpoint, you know, we have several folks who are in the multi-million dollar category, right? And in that case, I think the thing that has made the biggest impact, I think, from the folks that I've been speaking to, is strategically thinking about how they're developing their staff for the next generation, right? And I think that that's something that if I have a school and I started out at maybe $7,000 or $10,000 a month, and I've now, over the last year or 2 years, have really got the thing, you know, where I wanted it to be. I've got it to 30, 40, 50, right? See, now you have a completely different set of skills you have to start developing for yourself to take you to the next level, right? My example has been on these several calls that I'm recounting. If I were, you know, myself or you, frankly, Master Oliver, or a Steve LaValle or a Jeff Smith, right, if I'm going to go into a location and do all the intros myself, well, then probably I could do just one intro and roll them afterwards, and my ratio would probably be pretty damn good, right? But now that I'm in the position of having, you know, not me staff members operating those functions, it has to be much more systemized, much more, let's say automated, but much more just systemized, right? So, again, when we're talking about systemizing the introductory process, you know, it's a PowerPoint presentation that they walk through or a presentation binder that the staff member walks them through, the seven magic questions they ask them as they go through the introductory, whatever the case may be. Those are the things I think that as I get to the threshold of the $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month threshold, those are the things that now I've really got to be focused on actually monitoring the implementation of those strategies, right? So, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about a lot is surveilling, you know, the intro room, you know, putting audio and video surveillance in the intro room, putting audio and video surveillance at the front desk and by the front counter, and, you know, these recording your staff live doing intros. Mr. Oliver, I think the thing that you've said many times that really makes an impact on folks at that level, and again, if I'm in the position of Robert Blum or John Metcalf or Mike Mertens, right? If I'm in that position, now I sort of have a predictable, reliable system, but I can't forget to keep an eye on how people are operating it. And what you said a lot, Mr. Oliver, I think that makes a really big impact on how you think about this, is you're now the coach of the football team. So what does the coach do after the game is they go back into the locker room the next day and review game film, right? So if you have your program director watching the film of him doing the intros yesterday and the whole staff, you know, is part of that process, now you start to really have some positive pressure from below, right, and some positive pressure from above, keeping everybody accountable, you know, keeping everybody on track with what they're doing, keeping them on track with, you know, well, why didn't you follow the script here? You know, why did you get off track here? Why, you know, those types of things. And from an organizational growth standpoint, that type of post-game analysis and sort of transparency, I think, is a huge step to get to the next level, if that makes any sense.
It does. I have a couple comments on that, but we apparently have a few people who confused the text and email they got yesterday for the maximum impact call with the information that went out for the inner circle call and didn't realize they were different numbers.
Yeah.
Carol had just called me about that, and so we may have several others. That was two inner circle members who were trying to get on the call, who had not received the correct information. And just to clarify for everybody, we have a different phone call and a different password for each of the different levels of the calls, because we don't want general members to, you know, to log into this call, for instance. So if you're on the call, obviously I'm preaching to the choir on that, but if you're listening to the recording because you missed it, you know, let's point that out for everybody. And you know, so we may have a few more people missing than we would have thought today. But what we'll do here is, you know, make it very interactive for everybody who makes it, and share the recording for everybody who didn't make it.
Yeah, we have more than a majority, so
To expand from what you said a minute ago, is one of, I think, the mistakes that people make when they now have a medium-sized or a fairly big staff relative to the martial arts industry anyway, is a lot of martial artists, and part of it is the syndrome of you grew them from within, and so you keep treating them too much like a student who's paying you rather than a staff member who's held accountable for results. And other times we're just, you know, we confuse trying to be nice with having a high level of accountability of results. And the one of the books that I've always enjoyed, and I wouldn't say it encapsulates my philosophy, but it's a counterpoint to much of the other things you read, is a book called The Rogue Warrior on Leadership by Dick Marchinko. I don't think physically it's in publication, although if you go to Amazon or someplace, you can probably find a bunch of used ones. I do think.
Yeah, but if you want an entertaining management book.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, and the counterpoint is this is the guy in background who created SEAL Team 6, the SEAL Team group that took down Bin Laden. And so he was the original team leader for that group. And their original tasking was to test the security of all U.S. naval, all U.S. Nuclear facilities. And so they were assigned with the task of breaking in, or trying to break in, pretending to be terrorists, and trying to break in every nuclear facility operated by the U.S. internationally. And were so successful, they pissed everybody off in the chain of command and got himself thrown in the brig at one point. But the book is very good. I just read another book, and I'm in the middle of an additional one that I would recommend as well. I don't know what took me so long to get around to it, but the book Lone Survivor, which was a very a bestseller. And it's about a SEAL team in a sniper team in Afghanistan that ended up a four-man team. Only one gentleman survived, and then they sent a rescue crew of eight people in the helicopter crew and eight SEALs in, and they all died. So it was a total of 19 that didn't make it out, just this one gentleman who did. And the book is fabulous because it spends a portion of its time going behind the scenes at the in Coronado with the SEAL team training, and then it talks about just the mindset of the SEAL team training as it related to his ordeal. Then there's another book that was actually it's called The Warrior Elite: The Forging of SEAL Class 228, which was written about the SEAL team training. In the same classroom as this Marcus Luttrell, who was the lone survivor from the other book. In fact, if you some of you get down to some of my events, my actually had him as our century, had him as a speaker at one of the super shows. But the book is incredibly engaging. But what people do a lot of times poorly with staff is they massively undertrain them, and then they're afraid to hold them completely accountable for processes. And then, you know, tend to absorb responsibility personally rather than holding the staff member accountable. I, made the comment one time, people asked me how with 50 staff members, I didn't have ulcers. You know, the joke in me, the answer was, well, I don't have ulcers, but I am a carrier. And you've got to hold them extremely accountable, and you've got to be careful about the inbred nature of developing them from within. And so many of these guys who are martial artists that you've developed come at it with a real sense of self-righteousness when it comes to marketing, money, and so forth. So you've really got to make sure you put an incredible amount of training into them and hold them extremely accountable. Again, if you're not doing with your staff at least 4 to 5 hours a week of training. The other thing I think we'll see behind the scenes at West Point is, you know, how many man hours go into training for every expected hour in the field in that kind of context. Of course, you know, SEALs or Delta is probably the highest level in the military context of that, but the level of training they have to go through to be as competent as they are is Herculean. And we should take that as an example of how we have to think about our own staff training. So we've got quite a few people on the line, before Master Smith joins us here, why don't we just open it up and discuss the takeaways from Orlando?
Yeah, absolutely. So anybody can unmute yourself by just hitting *6 on your phone, and you'll be unmuted. Marshall, I think on that, by the way, I think you mentioned something that people are. We have to be particularly conscious of in this industry, this business, especially the way staff tend to come from, like you said, strictly from within. There's a book by Lawrence Peter called The Peter Principle. I'm sure lots of folks have read it, but I came from, in part, the restaurant industry and the casino industry, and that's a prime example of the same thing. If you think about you know, take everybody out of your own business for a minute so that you're a little bit more objective. But if you were to look at, like, a casino, you have, you know, just because someone was a good dealer doesn't make them a good supervisor necessarily, right?
No.
And just because someone was a good supervisor doesn't necessarily make them a good, you know, shift manager, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So,
well,
an example
of that that's even closer to our context is in sales, right? And so what happens is people take their top salesperson and now make them sales manager. Or, you know, in a multi-school environment, you take your top branch manager or program director and put them in charge of several locations. I mean, that oftentimes doesn't work any more than taking somebody who's a good black belt physically and athletically and making them a head instructor. Oftentimes it's the wrong personality for that. I always like to take the example of football. You know, just because somebody's a great, you know, quarterback doesn't mean they're going to be a great coach. And, you know, I know in the NFL there's a few that were player coaches and a few that were, you know, high quality players before they moved into coaching. But that, you know, that's fairly few and far between. And it's also fairly few and far between that somebody who's at the peak of their game athletically is also going to be good at coaching other people to do what they, you know, they can do.
Exactly. And so basically the Peter principle basically dictates that in I guess nepotistic, I don't know if you want to describe it that way or not, but in industries that promote almost strictly from within, people are promoted to the level of their own incompetence, to the highest level of their own incompetence. So they, what tends to happen, again, if you were to put it in, I guess, maybe the football connection, what happens is they start off at level one. They're really, really good at level one, so you move them to level two. They're really, really good at level two, so you move them to level three. They're not quite as good, but they're still such a good guy that they end up getting moved to level four, where they really kind of suck. And now, since they were such a good guy for so long, they're so valuable to you psychologically, you can't, like, get rid of them. And demoting them would be kind of like a slap in the face. So they end up getting stuck at level four, being very bad at what they do forever, right? So I think that's definitely something that we have to be, you know, hyper careful of. To kind of loop back, I think, to the original point of that is, you have to have a mechanism in place to monitor and review actual performance with everybody in the school. You know, monitor the, and now with flip cameras being so cheap and you have those little web IP cameras that you can stick in the corner of an office and they take literally like 10 minutes to put up. And, you know, they're so inexpensive and so good and you can be so transparent with your training processes that, you know, it's very, very, very important. And I think one of the things that, you know, kind of rings a bell that Dan Kennedy said once a long time ago was, no matter how good your staff training process is, whatever you think your staff members are doing right now isn't what they're doing right now, right? So you have to make sure that you have that system in place to monitor and review with them. It is best for both of you.
Yeah, and there's no piece of any process they're going to be doing that you can't videotape or audio tape inexpensively now. And once you have a staff pretty thoroughly trained, is they can self-correct 90% of what they do wrong by just watching it in an objective way. And we have Master Smith on the phone with us, but the last point I would make is I thought it was pretty instructive. Again, I hate to use football examples when I don't know anything about football, to tell you the truth, but, you know, when I was having those meetings with Carl Mecklenburg, who was, you know, all-pro, here in Denver, he's on what they call the Ring of Fame. I'm told he's on the short list to someday be in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, he was talking about the coaching process in pro football, and it wasn't the kinder, gentler environment. You know, he basically described it as you're watching, you know, watching game film and going through stats with the coach who's basically yelling at you for everything you screwed up. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't at that level about having somebody patting you on the back and reinforcing what a superstar you were. In fact, at that level, they have to have the opposite. Now, the key component of being able to hold somebody that highly accountable is having a lot of bench strength. You've got to have a lot of people who want the role, and you've got to have bench strength coming in. Again, that book that I read recently about Apple was the same thing. It talked about not them continuing to promote people, but finding the exact right person for the role and getting them comfortable with the fact of being the best designer, but you're never going to be, you know, COO or CEO, that's a different, you know, different skill set. So it is something you want to be careful about. But Master Smith, hey, we wanted to go circle back through and really anchor in the upgrade process a little bit more, maybe be a little interactive with any questions that people had, and make sure that one of the biggest gaps that I see among our Inner Circle and Peak Performers is either not having the right level of upgrade process in play, or their ratios are a little slack, and sometimes massively slack. So why don't we expand on that, and feel free to invite any of the Inner Circle members to just ask any questions you want as we go. So again, if you hit star six, that gets you off the mute, you can just jump in here. So, Matt Smith, do I have you?
Yes, you do. Can you hear me okay?
All right, perfect.
Okay.
I
heard what you were saying, but it didn't sound like you were asking me a question.
Yeah, well, let's start with this. The kind of recap is we discussed it a little bit at the Inner Circle member meeting, but really what's happening at Sterling, which is just the implementation of the systems that you and I have been developing for 30 years, probably you far before me and taught it to me, and then I perhaps tweaked and expanded. But it's really the idea of the minute that somebody comes into the school, your communication with them is to prep them for and help them plan for committing to be a black belt, and then reframing them for the fact that there's higher levels to the program, and showing them how to move to those higher levels. And the number that you were running last year, and I'm sure it's still about the same, was 87% of people who enrolled ended up renewed within the first couple months, and in many cases within about four lessons. And of that 87%, I think the number was about 90% of them going into the higher level of the options. So going into the leadership program at about another $100 a month, compared to going into the lower level program. Are those numbers about right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And, describe, I mean, we walked through the process quite a bit on that last call we did, which, Toby, if I'm not mistaken, we have recorded, and it's up on the member site now. Is that right?
Yeah, it is recorded. It's not on the site yet. It's actually converted to MP3 now, so it should be up in a day or two.
Okay. So if they missed that call, they can go back and replay it. That was our Peak Performer Inner Circle call just before Orlando. But anyway, so S. Smith, how do you get the staff into the mindset? Because, of course, you're doing very few of these yourself. I mean, it's mostly being done by your program director and your head instructor working together. How do you get your staff into that mindset of not dropping the ball on that process?
Well, to be honest with you, the first thing that you have to do is you have to do it yourself.
Yep.
They didn't buy into it. The year before, it was less than half that.
Yep.
And they had every excuse in the book because it was the new Mile High system that we are implementing 100%. And that means that we put everybody on leadership. Mm-hmm. And they were still in the frame of Black Belt Club and Master Club. And they bought into it a little bit, but their excuse was nobody's going to pay that. They said it's too high. They came up with every excuse there was.
Yeah.
So what we had to do was I had to go in and just start talking to the parents, explaining the program. Now, of course, they had to be doing a good job in the classroom, which they were. Because if they're not, doing the character development out there, if they're not doing the full-blown curriculum that we're doing, if they're not seeing the quality of the students at the higher leadership program where they're getting extra training, so all of those things have to be in place first, and that's a misconception that some people have. Some people think you can just be a good salesman and talk them into it.
No.
And you can talk a few people into it, but that's going to backfire on you later because if you're not delivering, then they're going to figure that out pretty quick.
Yeah.
So, once you have your program in place, and for most schools, especially our startup schools, the hardest thing for them is they've got people in the old system that they weren't paying as much, and they thought they were getting black belt training then. And then when we have a new hybrid system, they have to really visually see it, and they have to be able to see the different, you know, skill sets and the training and the character development with the Mat Chats and all of the follow-up with all of our, you know, homework, self-discipline, book club, and all those sheets that they're doing at home, and their job list and their academic reports and, you know, that kind of follow-up that you have to do. So there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that takes place to get your system up to speed. And then once it's up to speed, it's like, and of course I got to use you as the example, because every time we'd go out to Denver, I would go in there and I'd tell everybody, you see everybody at those blue tops? Yeah, they're all on leadership. How many are in black top? Two or three. Then how come we're the other way around? And I said, it's because you guys, your expectation is that they're going to do the black top, which is basically Master Club, which is just the first degree, or just a shorter commitment, or less of a commitment, not to second degree full-blown program.
Yep.
Well, once I got them to buy into it, and then we started getting people in the leadership, and then, you know, it's those first few, it's like priming the pump. You do a lot of work pumping, you got to throw some water in there, prime it, pump it, and then the water starts coming. And that's kind of the same thing with the whole renewal system. You gotta first get those first few going. And when we initially started it, what I really did is I handpicked. Now, we had about 200 students at the time. I handpicked about 6 students that I knew that I had to have in the program because they had the potential to be future instructors. They were our real leaders. They were the top prime in the school. And what I did for them is I actually went in and gave them a scholarship, flat out, straight across the board scholarship. They were still paying the same amount of tuition they were. Their tuition didn't go up any. They got to stay on the same payment plan for the duration of the leadership program, but I gave them the leadership program on a scholarship basis. And I told them, just like universities offer scholarships because they want certain students to come to their university based on either their academic skills or their scholastic skills, and or their sports skills. And based on that, they expect them to perform. So if they're on a sports a scholarship, then they would be playing football. And if they don't play football, then they don't get their scholarship, and they're out of the program. And well, that's the same thing that we did. So we got them committed to coming in and being real full-blown leaders and training to be instructors. And, you know, so they were basically on an assistant instructor training program, but it was the leadership program. And then the next month, I went in. Now, we were still signing people up for leadership program. Those were just the few that we handpicked. The next month, we went down to 4 people that we selected, which was our next tier, and we gave them a 50% scholarship. The next month, we did 4 more, just only 4. That's all that was going to get it. The next month, they got a 25% discount. And after that, then everybody was regular. Well, now, since we had our top students, the cream of the crop that were in it and were doing it, and their parents were praising it and saying how great it is, blah, 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 then pretty soon the others started following along. It's, you know, it's like the Pied Piper.
Yeah.
But again, you have to have a program in place.
Let's stop right there. The it is so important to always be aware of that. You know, I like to call it the bandwagon effect, and you know, sometimes refer to it as social proof. But it's so important to be aware of creating that environment in your school where anything that you want the majority of the students to do is it visible to them that that's the thing that everybody's doing. And if you're, you know, whether it's for you promoting an event or a seminar or you're doing a high-level leadership got to have the environment right where if you look at it from a parent's perspective, they look around and say, well, this is what everybody else does, must be the right thing to do. So, you know, that bandwagon effect or that social proof is extremely important. Here's a question that's not about process, Master Smith. You know, we do have some of pretty high-performing schools, but that really don't have a quote-unquote upgrade program. So, you know, I enroll at $149 a month per year, and then I renew for 3 years at $149 a month, and I just go to work on focusing on retention and keeping them as long as possible. As contrast that with I've got a $149 a month tuition or $199 tuition or $249 tuition, and then I bump them up $100 or $200 a month and have a prepay. How does that affect the growth overall? What's the difference in your mind between those two? You still there?
I hit the mute button.
Okay. But from your standpoint,
I got that whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's where, when you look at it, and let's use your number, the 150 average tuition, which I think is low, but let's just say that's what they are because, you know, there's different prices in different parts of the country. But if your basic program is 150 and your leadership is 300, then you basically are doubling your gross.
Yeah.
Just right off, just looking at it from that point of view. But where the real effect comes into place, when they're paying this tuition on a 4 to 6 year commitment, now what you're doing is you're guaranteeing that money to be coming in as long as you're teaching good classes and they're not dropping out. You have that contractually obligation of making those payments now of double. Well, most people, you know, when they come in, they sign them up for a year or less. But let's say it's a year. So what that means is everybody that you enrolled this year, if you don't renew them, you have to go out and get all those students all over again. Well, you're going to do that anyway, but if you renewed them, now not only are they staying and you have the extra tuition, if we just kept all of those people paying basic program and then we got another group the same amount, just say 15 enrollments a month, which would be 180, and let's say we started with 180 students, well, we doubled the gross there. But when you made it 300 for the renewal program, now you've got three times what you were making. Now you have 450 a month coming in just off of those new people that are paying the yearly tuition, and then 300 a month from all those people that have signed up for the longer commitment. Now, that's the second year. You go into the third year, now you have 300 plus 300 plus those people that are signing up for the year at 150. So now you have 750 coming in, which is over your original 150. You see how the numbers go up. You go to your fourth year, and it goes up another 300. So now just do the math.
Well, let me interject there because that was another point of discussion. Let's say at the meeting is some people don't believe that if I move them from a 1 year enrollment to a Black Belt Club enrollment to a leadership program that has an effect on the dropout rate of that group of students. So let's get your take on it. If I've got somebody enrolled for a year versus I have somebody enrolled and committed to Black Belt, does that change what the monthly dropout rate is for that group of people, or does it essentially stay the same and you're hoping they're going to be paying more per month?
Let me just put it this way. If I said to you, if you lease the car for 3 years or you leased it for 1 year with the option of leasing it for two more years at the same price, which do you think? How many people at the end of that first year are going to get a new car? Get another model of something else that their friend is driving. Maybe they're switching from a Beamer to a Mercedes or et cetera. But once they're committed on paper, they've not only made the financial commitments because of the extra training that you're giving them on leadership, they are mentally committed because the parents see the difference in the kids, and that's where they stick with it. In a basic program, the parents see some subtle changes, but not near as much as they do in a leadership training program, because we're teaching them how to be leaders. And because we're doing it based on the West Point way of leadership, they're basically getting almost a West Point education there as far as character and leadership development, as for peanuts compared to what they would have to pay to develop any kind of leader in a child. And unfortunately, for our parents out there, there's nowhere they can take them to be leaders. There's not a place that says, bring them here, we're going to teach them how to be leaders. There's nobody that teaches all that, character development, public speaking, gets them in there and builds their confidence with self-defense skills, get them physically in peak condition, gives them that kind of confidence, has them doing those kind of things around the house. You know, if you see one of our graduations when the kids are getting their medals for doing the self-discipline around the house and reading from their book club, I mean, we'll have a graduation, 150 people graduating last month, and out of that 150, we gave away over 400 medals. Well, that means that each one of these kids, to get a medal, had to do at least 30 things around the house to help mom or dad without them asking. They had to read 30 reading sessions, book club sessions, to be able to get that medal. They had to practice at home for at least 30 days, 30 times, to be able to get that medal. They had to have an A or a B average to get that award. So when we have over 400 awards given out among those people, parents see the results at the graduation. That's our showcase. And of course, every graduation is an infomercial.
Yeah.
Because during that graduation, we're putting all of those leadership people on a pedestal, because they get to come up and they do stuff that the other kids in basic program aren't doing. Mm-hmm. And then we even have our black belts in leadership come up and do their demonstration so we can show them what it's going to look like at the black belt level. So that is constantly selling the program. I mean, for everybody who hasn't signed up by the graduation for leadership, after they see the graduation and they see the difference in the performance, and I explained to the parents, I said, now you'll notice that some of the leadership people are green belts, but compared to the kids that are in the basic program as a green belt, you see a big change, a big difference in their curriculum and what they're doing, because they're on the black belt track of training on the leadership program. And in that program, they have extra curriculum that gets them to black belt. Just like when you go to college, if you're a sophomore, some people are still, as a sophomore, taking basic classes, but others are taking advanced accounting and engineering or something like that, because they've already declared their major, and so they're going to go on and take those other courses that are going to help them get their degree. Well, we explain it the same way. We have different courses and classes that they take that help them get that degree in here, and our degree in here is first degree or second degree, or the first two degrees, and that's what they're working towards. And they say, well, what happens if they don't want to be a black belt? And I said, well, it's kind of like going to college and you say, I don't want to major in anything. Well, then all you do is you just take basic classes, but you really don't have a degree in anything. And they go, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense. I said, you know, sooner or later they have to decide what they want to do in college, and they have to focus on that curriculum that gets them to degree.
Yeah. Hey, let's shift before you. Yeah, let's shift before you run out of time and we run out of time.
Hold on just one second. Okay.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah, and Mr. Robert, let's I think real quickly, Mr. Smith didn't hit one of the financial drivers. I think that's really important to answer your original question about, you know, how does implementing that type of a that type of efficacy on the upgrade process financially. And when he said that, you know, when you look at the arithmetic growth in revenue, it doubles the gross, right? But I think you actually have to look at another piece of it is paid in fulls. If I'm just doing end-to-end 12-month deals, and I know a couple of guys in the group are doing just that, or if I'm doing a linear, they did their six, now I put them on a 36 at the same price. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it changes the dynamic of the paid in full by a lot if now you're moving them up 50% in tuition, right?
Yeah.
So now you have the ability to, if you take Model A, if I'm just doing 12, 12, 12, 12 for 4 years, right? So, you know, the paid in full is 2,000. Go ahead.
Well, not to interrupt that flow, but the thing is that I hate about is 149 a month now, and now I'm going to commit to 3 years at 149 a month. Is really it's only a commitment that we're making. It's not a commitment that they're making, because we all know that at any point if they drop out, they're not going to keep paying, and we're not going to really do anything other than dun them for 90 days to fix that. And so really what you do is you lock yourself in at today's prices for 3 years in the future, but you don't really get them committed to anything to speak of. Now,
for lessons that become more expensive to deliver over time.
Oh, yeah. They always become more expensive to deliver over time. And frankly, the other example I like to use is, you know, both my kids are in private school. And, you know, it's certainly true that a private college is a heck of a lot more expensive than a private daycare and or private preschool. And middle school is more expensive than elementary. High school is more expensive than middle school. And Harvard's more expensive than the second-tier private school that happens to be in your same city. And so people are used to the fact that as you move through an educational process, the expense of what you're learning is higher. And from our standpoint, I mean, I tend to need a much higher level instructor to teach third-degree black belts than I do to teach green belts. And so you've got to put it in that context as well. But and again, not anything from what you're saying, Toby, is that the, you know, prepaid on longer upgraded renewals will always enhance the revenue flow of a school. Usually I see that good for about a 50% bump. Because in almost all cases, no matter how good retention is, if somebody is paying for 3 years in advance, you've got the time value of money, so you're receiving it now. Number two is you have zero risk of them not making the payments. Three is you improve your retention a little bit because if finances get tight, this is one of the things they cut. And number four is some portion of the people are going to drop out and not receive the lessons they paid for, so you have some you know, what's called in marketing circle breakage of money received for service you can't provide. Now, I don't like that component myself. I fight and scream to get everybody to take advantage of the service they paid for. But on the flip side of it is that one is people who paid for 3 or 4 years in advance drop out at a lower rate because they don't have the excuse to cut the budget, you know, for no other reason. But anyway, so anybody have any questions of Master Smith or myself or Master Milroy or even more importantly, some takeaways from our Orlando experience that you'd like to share with everybody, things that you've implemented so far? And again, hit star six.
Hello?
Yes.
This is Paul Miller.
Hey, Paul.
Sorry. How are you?
I missed you in Orlando. Good. Good.
Oh, yeah, things fell apart in a hurry for me. I missed it terribly, but it was a good thing I didn't go. Two of my head instructors, one was on vacation, the other one got deathly sick, and so we were in a little bit of trouble, so I had to stay there.
Well, that's a shame. It was a fabulous event.
I heard that it was, and but I have every intention of going to the one in New York as well as the one in Colorado. So,
yeah, I'm really looking forward to West Point and the marketing boot camp You know, I haven't done one of those at a high level for about 4 years, but we're really going to go through an update. And this year, kind of A to Z marketing, and next year really delve about 24 solid hours into the internet side of things.
Wow.
But
I wanted to take a moment and just tell you that, you know, I'm new to the inner circle and been with NAMA for a little while, but I'm going to tell you over the past 3 months, we've doubled our income in each one of the schools.
Wow.
In the last 3 months. And a lot of it was what Master Smith was talking about, was really getting the other staff members on board into actually thinking that they can do it.
Yeah.
That was a huge boost to us, you know, moving forward. My guess is that we're going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of quadrupling by the end of the year.
Well, you can't beat those numbers.
I'm going to tell you.
And by the way, starting from where? I think in Paul's case is particularly significant because he's already started in a place that's, you know, for most people pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, since you didn't make the two last meetings, let's introduce you to everybody a little bit. Let me give a thumbnail and have you expand on it briefly. But you have three locations. You know, my geography of the greater Philadelphia area isn't great. I was trying to describe to somebody where you're at. But give them a sense of where you're at physically.
Yeah, we're actually in the Lehigh Valley, which is the third largest metropolis in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And it's Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton. We're about an hour from Philadelphia, an hour and a half from New York City, and about an hour and a half from Harrisburg.
Would I be correct in saying that you're on the New York City side of Philadelphia? In other words, you're kind of between the two.
That would be correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And when I was in Atlantic City, I was trying to describe to somebody where you and a couple of the other people were. And, you know, I get pretty turned around up in that area, even though I was in D.C. for several years. And you have three locations. On the transported after-school care and daycare side, what kind of cumulative growth did you do last year?
Last year we did a little over $3 million.
From that side of it, and then is not atypical, frankly, is the martial arts schools attached to those facilities weren't really performing very well.
Oh no, the largest school that we had was $10,000 per month, and that was the one that my son runs, and then the other one was about $5,000, and the other one was about $3,500.
Yeah, which my description was, having come from Tiger Shulman's operation, as you threw out the baby with the bathwater.
You know what? That was a really wonderful thing to say because it was the truth.
Yeah. And so had applied all the right business systems to the daycare, transport, after school care, and then had gone a different direction on the martial arts side.
Our margins on the on the child care side are very good, and we were just sucking wind on the martial arts side of it, the part that we actually started with, and we had all of the things that we needed, we just weren't doing it.
Yeah.
So what I'm I will tell you, Zach, he hit a little over $20,000 this month, and the other one did $12,000, and the other one did $6,500. So, I mean, it's on the upswing. And we just did a big promotion with a group called Living Social.
Mm-hmm.
We got 206 people to buy our introductory program.
Oh, wow. Good numbers.
It was awesome. You know, so, you know, with that, you know, we believe that we will again, you know, double our income. But one of the things that I will tell you that we're lacking in is those renewals that Master Clark is talking about, you know, and you guys are talking about, because it seems as though the boys, you know, need another boost as to that they can do it and they can get the numbers. I mean, we raised our prices at your, you know, you said, raise the prices, and we did that, and now we're getting $192 a month, you know, as opposed to $99.
Yeah.
And now people...
Paul, but, you know, I think Paul said something a couple of minutes ago. I think that's really, really useful for everybody. And I know for me, it was like, it was a big switch that flipped. And, you know, you have those aha moments, right? And, Paul, this might be useful for you. I'll tell you what happened in my particular situation. I had a partner in the three locations, and, you know, we had implemented a lot of things, and frankly, I wasn't paying that much attention to exactly how it was converting. But at the end of the year, it was a particular year, you know, I don't know how many years ago, but at the end of the year, I sat down with my partner, and we had started offering, Paul, the ability for people to prepay on an accelerated basis, right? So we gave them the monthly option. After they agreed to the monthly option, we then went back to them and presented to them, of course, paid in full, but we would also present, if they couldn't do it paid in full, if they had some financial reason, you know, for not wanting to do paid in full, but they were interested in saving the money, we would give them, you know, maybe a 3-pay option or a 6-pay option, whatever, right? So maybe they could pay for that 4-year membership in 12 months or in 6 months or in 3 months or whatever, right? And
yes.
What happened was, what you're describing, Paul, and I think what's really useful for everybody and what Master Smith said earlier is there is a confidence issue in the people who are selling the program. And Master Oliver is exactly right. Your confidence changes in one instant. It doesn't take time. You just decide to not be fearful anymore, right? But for your staff members, sometimes it takes them a while to make that decision, right? So for me, what it was I sat down with my partner at the end of the year, and we started looking through all the contracts that we had done that year. And I looked at, you know, we were looking at them from kind of 40,000 feet in the air. And as we got through all the contracts, we realized that we had, you know, a little over 40% of the people that were paying accelerated payments, right? So instead of paying, you know, $149 or $197 a month, they were paying, you know, $500 a month for 12 months or you know, $2,200 a month for 9 months or something like that to, you know, to pay their 4-year membership off in 1 year or whatever. And that was what that to me, Paul, said in the back of my head, well, wait a minute. It's not a demographic constraint, right? It's not that the market won't bear that tuition. It's just that they have to feel like they're getting a really good deal. You know, they have to feel like what they're investing is inconsequential to what they're getting. So, you know, looking through those physical contracts and saying, oh, my God, almost half of the people are paying more than I'm asking them to every month, you know? Kind of helped me build the confidence in myself and just say, well, hell with it. You know, why don't we just charge that much for a month and call it a day, you know? And that was kind of where we ended up, you know, basically just completely, you know, changing all the pricing structure to what $197 and then $249 and $359, you know? But that might be useful for everybody. I mean, you know, looking at that, if you start offering prepay options and accelerated pay options, you'll be surprised. You know, that people would rather not have a 4 years of payments. They'd rather have 12 and or 6 or 3, and that can really help the revenue model as well.
I can replicate that story a ton of times, Toby, but one of the ones that comes to mind was Miko Pellet in Coronado. And Miko was doing a black belt club for 3 years, but he always had it set up where they paid for it in the year. And one of the first things that I talked him into doing is just take what they were paying in a year and extend it to 36 months. And what happened is nothing changed, right? Is the impact of conversion rates went up a little bit. And then the next thing we did is then do a 50% bump on the tuition for what Black Belt Club was overall and then what a leadership program is. But part of the element was is when he did it in the first 90 days, he calls me in a panic, and we know on a regular call. He says, "Well, everybody's the reason that everybody's not renewing is because they say it's too expensive." And to his credit, he had pretty good stats. So I said, well, let's go to the stats. You know, in the previous 90 days, how many people did you offer your Black Belt Club to? And he told me. I said, what, you know, how many of them accepted? And he told me. And then I said, in this 90 days, how many did you do? And he told me. And I said, and how many of them did? And he told me. I said, well, let's look at the ratio. Actually, your percentage of close went up. But what happened is, you know, just out of curiosity, in the previous 90 days before he changed this, what was their excuse then for why they didn't renew? And what do you mean? I said, well, you're hearing now that their excuse is price, but your ratio is actually a little bit better. I don't really care what the excuse was that people used for why they didn't do it. I care what my sales ratio is, right? So, you know, were they using some other excuse before, or were you just not hearing that excuse before? So that's part of it, is making sure you have good numbers and then, you know, pointing out to, in real practical terms, the staff what the ratios are before and after, so they really start getting some money for that.
Well, one of the things that happened to us is that when we first started doing the strong marketings, I checked my ratios. The first 2 weeks, we signed up 18% of the people. The second 2 weeks, 58%. Mm-hmm. And the third 2 weeks, we signed up 85%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good. I mean, obviously, it was a learning curve for us.
Yeah. Hey, you did something in addition to the Living Social. First of the year, you did a thing that frankly, I had forgot to even think about it. We had talked about, I had done it with Chuck Norris, Kick Drugs Out of America, but you did the little raffle ticket thing. And sent the students out. Tell everybody about that, because that's an idea I haven't discussed probably for 4 or 5 years, because frankly I'd forgotten about it.
Yeah, I have to tell you, it really worked very well. We signed up in January and February, 37 new people a month, utilizing the card. It's a card that we call it a community appreciation card, and it allows a student to come in for 5 weeks and for unlimited classes and a uniform for $10.99. Mm-hmm. And for, you know, it is very, very easy to sell. And what we did is we got our demo team to go out and use it as a fundraiser. And so they started going out to all the people in the town and selling these things, and all of a sudden the phone starts ringing with all of these people buying these cards, and we're signing up about 80% of the people that come in. Now, some people come in just because, you know, but for the most part, it's been a wonderful program, and you know, we offer them, we sign them up on their third or fourth class, you know, for the beginner program, which is for the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And we got over 110 cards sold in January. And the person...
Go ahead, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all right. The person who sells the card keeps the $10.99,
mm-hmm.
which is really an incentive for them, you know, especially for you know, the demo team or some other fundraising. But the cool part about it was that we were able to get into the public school and use it as a fundraiser for public schools, which we had been having a tough time getting into before, and that opened up another door for us, so that we now teach our bullyproof program throughout all of the schools that we service, and now we're becoming the heroes in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Now, and let's discuss that idea. The way that I did it last time, as I recall, was there are companies, I just looked this up last week, there are a bunch of companies that print raffle tickets. So if you go Google printing raffle tickets, you'll find a bunch of them. And it's dirt cheap, but what they are is booklets where on one side, if you get you know, this format, on one side, it's a little tear out. On one side, it's name, address, phone number, perhaps email address that you can have printed on the little stub that stays with the booklet. The other is a coupon that you can do, you know, fairly big size if you want, coupon for what the offer is going to be. They can also print on the backside. The last time I had done it, we did it as a fundraiser for Kick Drugs Out of America, and then we rolled it out to the high school band that was trying to raise money and the, you know, different things in local elementary, middle school, high schools to let them sell it to raise money for their own activities. And the idea was is they could sell the tickets, we would honor them, they keep all the money. We were doing, I think, a $49 offer. But it was always they can keep the money as long as they give us the stubs, because we've got to have the contact information. And the problem is the lower the price goes is the higher non-redemption you'll have. But if you get mostly the names and addresses and phone numbers of the people who bought them, that fixes that in part because now you can proactively follow up on them as well.
Yeah, well, we found very quickly is that it was really important for our people to contact the people immediately.
Yeah.
So that they didn't lose sight of, because $11 anymore isn't a lot of money, you know.
Yeah.
So to them, oh well, I gave it $11 to the kids, you know, for something, you know. But once we got them in, we had, I think, out of that 120, we only have 10 who haven't redeemed them so far.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Really?
Yep.
Now that's a hell of a number.
Yeah.
So you've had over a 90% redemption rate.
Yeah, it's been terrific. Now, we haven't had 90% sign up.
Right,
but,
sure.
But at the same time, it's still 32 more people than we normally would have signed up per month.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and so the way that it works is for January and February, you didn't see much change in income. But all of a sudden, March, bang, you know, now the income goes up considerably because we ask them for their registration fee as well as their first month's payment. And then the next one didn't come until the following month. But we saw a big push for that. So now what we have to focus on is getting the rest of these Living Social people in, and then how do we focus on the renewals.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
I almost hesitate to mention this just because I don't want to damage anyone's like self-confidence, but you know, on this particular group of people, I think we're safe. But you know,
there's a fair amount of ego security in the group.
right. There are a bunch of people in our industry and a whole bunch of many other groups that are fearful of presenting a discounted offer to a prospect, because when that prospect shows up, they're fearful of the person saying, "Well, I paid $49 for a month. Isn't it $49 a month?" Right? Which really means they just don't know how to handle that transition very well. However, I will tell you this, and we know, you know, obviously we have some statistics on it, but actually just from a confidence level standpoint, if they're paying the $49, or in this case $10.99, if they're paying this to a third party, you know, facility, you know, maybe it's the fundraiser for Girl Scouts or mm-hmm. fundraiser for, you know, whatever it is, it does help tamp down that likelihood, right, of them saying, "Well, I paid $49 for the thing, isn't it $49 a month?" Right. So, again, it's not a huge, it's not like a big, you know, home run or anything like that. But it is an interesting dynamic that when they're giving $49 to Children's Hospital or they're making the checkout directly to the elementary school, it does help diminish the likelihood of that happening. And it also helps soften that person psychologically from making the buying decision because they think you're a good guy for doing the fundraiser, right?
Yep.
Well, and it makes the sales conversation easier, too. Thank you for the donation to Children's Hospital, Kick Drugs of America, or whatever. With that, what we do is we donate, or we give you an additional $200 discount for having made that donation if you go ahead and finalize your enrollment at the second lesson. And so it makes the conversation even better. And I usually add in, you know, thanks for the $49 donation, As you know, we provide the lessons, the uniform, and all the materials as part of our donation. 100% of money that you get goes directly to Glendale Blank. But in addition to that, for having been kind enough to make that donation, we'll give you an additional $200 discount if, right? So it makes the conversation even easier from that standpoint as well.
Well, one of the things that I found was what we did on our card, we put it was a $249 value. Mm-hmm. And we broke it down into, this is what it would cost for the time, and this would cost for the uniform, so that when people see that, they're going to say, oh, well, it costs $249. Mm-hmm. And so I think it kind of takes away from that stigma of, oh, I only paid $49 or $10.99, for it. And it kind of says, no, this is a real value for you.
Absolutely. No, and you should definitely do that on everything you do. That's a really good point.
I got that from you guys, though, just so you know.
Yeah, I got it from you.
I stole it from you guys.
Yeah, we stole it from somewhere too. There ain't nothing original on this planet.
I just wanted to say thanks for the incentive to go ahead and do it.
You're quite welcome. And I think you undersell yourself. I think the martial arts side of your business is $1 million business this year. And then should be catching up with where you're at on the after school care by next year.
Well, I just want you to know my partner, who you have not met, is so excited because and he says I want to come up to New York to visit with these guys because he's our numbers guy, and he says I like these guys. He's never met you yet, but he likes you.
Good. We'll try to keep it that way. Hopefully when he actually meets us, we don't rub him the wrong way, because I've been known to do that time to time. By the way, a funny aside is Rand Zohar. Do you know Rand? Rand Zohar has been around the industry forever, and he's in suburban Philadelphia there somewhere. And he came to that little seminar we did in Atlantic City, and several of us went out to dinner that night at whatever the name of the restaurant is there in the casino, steakhouse. But we started talking, and I said something to the effect of, oh, goddamn Philadelphia. It's the first time I've ever done a seminar, and I sat down, I mentioned you. I said, I got, this father-son team, we're doing fabulous. Attentive, taking notes, everything else. And I've got these idiots, and we're arguing every freaking point. And I described them briefly. He goes, yeah, they're my idiots. I said, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, they're one of my students who when I had all my problems, who went down the street to try to compete with me, and screwed me over. So I'm describing the couple that was in the seminar and I keep having to apologize to Toby because it was. Hey, would you take these idiots in the other room and make sure I don't ever have to talk to them again?
That was pretty funny. Even my son commented. He says, what was that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You guys were there. That's right. They were in Philadelphia. That's right.
Well, remember, we had an existing Peak Performer member who was fabulous.
Ted.
And then Paul and son. And then we had this other couple who are doing Taekwondo, couldn't market that, added after school care, boxing, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, MMA, and some other damn thing. Cumulative growth between the three things is $12,000 a month, and argued every point all day. And it was trying to explain to me what their market would and would not bear, what their students would and would not do, why everything that I mentioned to them was stupid. first time I'd ever had somebody pay to that vocally and that obnoxiously argue every point.
I think I'm sending them the bill for my blood pressure, whatever the hell device I'm going to need.
But anyway, hey, we're going to run out of time here pretty quickly. Paul, a great contribution. Thank you very much. What we certainly want to do is get everybody's cumulative notes from Orlando. And Toby, you have most, if not everything, that we did on video, right? So we have a lot of.
Yeah, well, in fact, I have all the handouts and everything as well, and they're all uploaded on the member site. I just put them up last night.
Oh, good.
If you go to, and again, there's two different things. So we're reorienting some of the content right now to figure out how to make everything easier for everybody to find. But if you go to the TPIC section, the People Form Inner Circle section of the website, it'll say live mastermind meetings. And then I've sectioned them off into inner circle meetings and peak performer meetings, obviously. The videos that we did in the peak performer meeting and all the handouts we did at the peak performer meeting are in that section. And then all the stuff that we did on the inner circle section is in the inner circle section. So, you know, it's pretty intuitive if you go there. But all that stuff is up there. All the day one videos are up. None of the day two videos are up. I'm still digitizing right now, and it takes forever to upload. They're like, you know, big. So they should be up over the next couple of days.
And we also have quite an archive of handouts that everybody brought to share from the previous meetings. Are those up, or when we do our complete reorganization of everything on April 1st, do you have plans for those, Toby, for everybody to have access to that stuff?
Yeah, no, there's a pretty big archive up there. So, again, when you go to that live mastermind meeting, I moved it all around now. So when you go to that live mastermind section, it's sectioned off into either inner circle or peak performer. And there's audio recordings of many of the inner circle meetings, plus the documents and, you know, those types of things. And then in addition to that, many of the handouts I've categorized by what they apply to. So if you're looking for renewal stuff, go to the renewal section. And there's you know, things on renewal prep and launching a new renewal program and things like that. If you're looking for enrollment stuff, it'll be in that other section. So, you know, just take a look at the navigation. It's going to be changing over the next maybe 3 weeks. But it's you know, more intuitive, I guess.
Yeah, well, just so everybody knows, the complete look and feel of what is maximum impact, the basic level of MAPMA membership, which, of course, we send all of you guys for free, is going to make a dramatic overhaul starting April 1st. So we're going to make a dramatic overhaul on the website. You know, truthfully, the way we're thinking about it is we're basically ending all the kind of legacy stuff that we kept doing when we took over, flushing out, you know, the old low-level members and shifting to only really providing even a maximum impact, much higher level of content. And really our focus for maximum impact from this point forward is to grow schools where they qualify for peak performers. And then obviously grow peak performers in the inner circle. But there's going to be a pretty dramatic change. And so you'll see a pretty dramatic change both in the way the physical deliverables that go with that level are structured and how they look, what's on the website, and is really the focus on much higher level, better quality marketing pieces for even that level, more done for them, appropriate stuff, and less absolute volume of content. Toby, how would you phrase that differently?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the focus is really, you know, for many years, and most of you guys know who've been around for a while, you know, obviously what we inherited was stuff, frankly, that barely, you know, that may have worked in 1986 when all you had to do was put a picture of a karate uniform and a headline in the newspaper and, you know, the phone would ring. You know, obviously now it requires a bit more sophisticated process on almost everything. And we've been for the last, you know, probably a couple of years really trying to figure out what that middle ground is between, you know, if I'm used to that stuff and I like that stuff, how do I transition you into stuff that actually might work, right? And I think John Graydon had an interesting perspective on it when he started the company was, you know, if it looks pretty, people are more likely to use it. Whether it, you know, really gets good results or not is a whole other animal, right? So I think we're kind of changing that perspective. The second thing is, you know, reorient and organizing everything so that it isn't I'm looking for June's stuff, but it's, hey, listen, I need more students next month. I'm working on my marketing plan. I need four systems that are going to generate five enrollments apiece. Where do I go find it? And it's oriented in that manner, right? And then I think the third component is this virtual classroom is now we're shifting it to more of an on-demand video streaming service. where you can go and let's say you had, you're doing your class planners for the week on your Monday morning staff meeting, and you have, I don't know, little ninjas classes that you need to plan, and you want 6 new ways to teach Sidekick to little ninjas. Well, you can sort that way kind of like you would through YouTube and find 5 videos on how to teach Sidekick different ways to 4-year-olds, right? You know, those types of things. And what we want to do, and I'd like to ask for everybody's help on this, frankly, what we want to do is also include the next level, which will be instructor training, like how to teach these things more effectively, not just more exciting drills, although that's very useful. So anybody who, you know, would want to, you know, just flip cam or videotape, you know, some teaching strategies that they're using in their school that are working particularly well, we'd be happy to put them on there and use them and, you know, give you a little credit at the bottom or something like that.
Yeah.
That might be useful. We have a lot of very talented instructors in the groups.
Well,
so
I would say it even a little differently than that. So what a lot, and I think everybody needs, is the ability to visualize what an 850-person ninjutsu school, like, you know, with Will Mayer, we did a little interview with him yesterday. We'll plug him on the next Peak Performers call about retention. Or what a million-dollar-a-year MMA school with the floor looks like, what the facility looks like, a $50,000-a-month Taekwondo school, how the structure of the classes. And a lot of the current content that we've used, or NAVNA was using in the past, was, you know, teaching a specific drill, but it didn't really give you the visual of what the classroom looked like, the structure looked like, the feel of the school looked like. And so the more we can move towards getting the, you know, all of you guys, the top performing schools in the industry, pictures of what the floor looks like, picture of what the facility looks like, pictures of what the processes look like. And we want to get video first intro, second intro, different, you know, enrollment conference for Krav Maga, for cardio kickboxing, for MMA, for Taekwondo, for Shotokan. Kung Fu and so forth, but also pictures of what the beginner class looks like and what a black belt class looks like and everything in between. It just help expand everybody's thinking, but also to massively improve the level of service that happens across these schools. And again, to kind of go back to the old way of thinking, which was never my thinking, but the old way of thinking was you're bringing in martial arts enthusiasts and they want some new thing to teach. You always have that on the agenda. But really a higher level is how the class plan unfolds and how the orchestration is across a 45-minute or an hour classroom and making sure those things all work together well. Hey, Ashmoe, before we run out of time, would you do everybody the favor of maybe real quickly running through just for the inner circle what the one-on-one call schedule is next week? I know it's been faxed. It's been emailed. Starting this month, we're going to start mailing it out. Regularly as well, but if you could kind of just rattle off the times and the time zone and so forth, and I'll remind everybody for the calls with me, the number is 303-949-9634. We always schedule where you call me, because that way if you're at home or on your cell phone or at the school, we don't play phone tag. That's the one number I'll be at. But do you have that in front of you, Toby? Could you walk through for everybody so they can take notes or listen to the replay?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, for you, your calls are typically the second Tuesday and Wednesday of each month. So on a typical basis, it'll be the second Tuesday and Wednesday of each month. So this month, it's Tuesday the 13th and Wednesday the 14th. So Tuesday the 14th, and these times are all Eastern, so everybody can convert, you know, to where they are. Eastern time zone, Tuesday, 12 o'clock noon is Richard Tim, 12:20 is Sean Harvey, 12:40 is Penny Patassi. 1 p.m. Eastern is Michael Ferreira. 1:40 is Crystal Gabby. 2 p.m. is Joe Baruchi. 2:20 is Mike Pace. 2:40 is Eric Williams and Hyde Nguyen. 3 p.m. Eastern is Dave Inman. 3:20 on the 15th, which is a Thursday, is Jonathan Metcalf. 3:40 back on the 13th again. This is a Tuesday. It's Christopher Bro. 4 o'clock is Eric Sabarge. 4:20 is Carol Middleton, 4:40 is Dave Moss, and 4 o'clock is Mago Lorentzian. And then Wednesday, the 14th, is 12 o'clock is Jeff and Victoria Cielo,
1220 is John LaRoe, 1240 is Dave Doug DeBarger, 240 is Jeff Schiffalt, 3 o'clock is Jim Morrison, 320 is Paul Miller, 340 is Steve Giroux, 4 o'clock is Mike Mertens, 420 Mike Vodka, and 440 Jeff Ellis. And again, yeah, you should be receiving the schedule by email at least once a week. They'll also be updated on the website here in just a day or two, and by fax typically once a week. And then again, like Mr. Over said, we're going to be mailing it in an additional package as well, starting this month. So, yeah. I'll typically text message you the day before, and then 15 minutes before the group calls, the one-on-one calls, that doesn't work very well because of the nature of the timing. And that's kind of the structure.
And as a reminder, the maximum impact call, the peak performer plus inner circle call, and the inner circle call separately all have different call-in numbers because we block out the people at a lower level and don't want to publish the times and publish the numbers and end up with, you know, a bunch of people who shouldn't be in that group in the call. So, Carol, I apologize for you and Victoria's confusion today, but or Crystal, I think it was. But they all will be separate numbers, and that was on the sheet that we handed out, the sheet that we've been faxing out. The other thing I would point out, one is if you can overload me with information about what January and February have been like so far and what you're implementing in March and April, and do that by tomorrow or the next day, I promise I'll go through it all. Again, I'm increasingly skeptical of email as a communication source. I don't know how many times I've had calls with various ones of you who have said, did you get that thing I emailed? And when I go back and search for it, it might or might not be there, might or might not be in the spam filter. But the fax number is 1-800-795-0583. My physical mailing address is 825 Neville Lane, Golden, Colorado, 80401. There's no such thing as sending me too much information about what's going on. I'm pretty good at filtering what's relevant and what's not relevant. The other thing is,
I would say you could upload that stuff to the discussion forum. It would be pretty useful too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And any questions that you ever have are much better served by using the discussion forum than email, with the lone exception of something that's confidential enough you don't want the other members of Inner Circle to be involved in conversation. I've dealt with a few, you know, instructor accused of sexual something or other, you know, various things like that that you might not want to have a public discussion. But anything short of that, the discussion forum is much better served, one, because myself and Master Noah end up answering the question once, two, we get everybody else's feedback on it. Three is we're really working on getting critical mass going in there so it becomes a productive tool along with all the others for all of us. So admittedly, it's not a very productive tool yet because we haven't got a lot of critical mass of involvement yet. The other thing I would point out real quick is if that time that's scheduled for next week is bad for you, very quickly, today or in the morning, call Bob, 727-540-0500, extension 202, and he's the keeper of my schedule. He can find an alternative slot that will work. I'm happy to do that, but you know, don't have it be next Tuesday at 2:20 and I'm sitting by the phone and the no-show and call to schedule a different time. If you have a doctor's appointment or some other thing going on next week or that time, like with Jonathan's case, Tuesday don't work for him, so they've got it scheduled on Thursday. If there is that element to it, by all means, today or tomorrow at the latest, get hold of Bob and schedule a separate time. Toby, any last thing before we run for the day?
I think we're good. I think we've got a lot to accomplish.
Toby, are you free right now for a separate one-on-one call?
I'm actually moving into...
No. No, you're booked. Carol, are you still on the call?
Yes, I am.
What time were we supposed to talk today?
4:30.
Good. That works.
Okay.
I thought I was triple booked. I'm instead just double booked.
All right.
Okay. So I will talk to you in a couple of hours. Yeah. And for everybody else, let's kick butt.
In
and,
1 hour.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Bye.
Thanks to everybody else.
Thanks, all. See you soon.